You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colton Molesky, bring you daily Timberwolves content. If you would like a written form of Timberwolves content, check out the Locked On Wolves fan rake site. I know one of the other contributors on that site, Adam King, he had a really good article on Towns and the Timberwolves that he posted the other day. Go check that out. We are joined today by Lucas Hand. He is the host of the Locked On Clippers podcast. And we have a ton of Western Conference stuff to go over, Lucas. There was a huge amount of movement in the Western Conference over the weekend. The Timberwolves bumped down to the eighth spot. Teams are shifting all over the place. Utah is back in this thing. The Clippers have been bounced back on just the outside. Tons of movement again. It's going to be a down to the wire year. And I've been asking all the Western Conference hosts that I've had on over the last month or so, what do you make of this Western Conference race to the playoffs?
I mean, it's unique. Right, I think we talked about this last time. It's just that to have so many teams so close together is something that I can't ever remember being like this. I think Portland has separated themselves a little bit. It's probably more of a 4-10 race now instead of a 3-10 race. But even that, even the idea that the Clippers right now are outside of the playoffs and they're literally 3 losses away from home court advantage, that's insane. Like that's such a slim margin for error. That's like one ankle sprain to, like one guy missing a few games in December and you go on a little slump.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference between home court advantage and missing the playoffs. Not even a seed or two or being in and out, but from 4-9.
Yeah, it's insane. I think that it's made the playoff race, it's made it fun, but it's also made it incredibly stressful, especially if you're a fan and just trying to kind of get a read on teams. It's going to be incredibly hard once we actually get to the playoffs to kind of try and figure out outside of the Rockets or the Warriors how teams are going to perform, just because it really has been, like you're saying, and I think the Clippers kind of showed this best over the last like 6 games. They have a 3-game winning streak, and they're sitting pretty solid, and then they have the 3-game losing streak, and they get bounced out. You have the 2-game skid from the Timberwolves, and they're on the 8th spot, and they're just teetering on the edge of being in the playoffs or not. I mean, it's crazy. It's made it fun. It's made it a little stressful. But when we actually get to the playoffs, it's going to be really hard to read how these teams are going to perform against each other.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think even though Portland has separated themselves a little bit in the standings, I don't think they're significantly better than any of these other teams.
Mm.
So I think like 3-6 and 4-5 are both basically going to be coin flip series.
Oh, definitely. I would totally agree with that. While we're talking about the Timberwolves, just an outsider's perspective, kind of looking in on the Timberwolves, obviously you're daily on the Clippers beat, but from afar, this Timberwolves team without Butler, what do you think is kind of the perspective that you have, or the first thoughts that you have when you think of the Timberwolves right now in March?
I mean, so without Jimmy Butler, I don't really view them as necessarily being a playoff team or a huge threat compared to a lot of the other teams in this. Just like I think probably, you feel the same way when Utah is without Gobert, et cetera, et cetera. And that's another thing that's unique, is almost all of these teams have gone through a big stretch of the season without whoever their central star is. The Clippers, before they traded Blake Griffin, didn't have him for like 5 weeks in November and December. New Orleans has been without Cousins. San Antonio has been without Leonard. So everyone's kind of fought through their own level of adversity to kind of end up at this equilibrium. But, I thought when Jimmy Butler went out, my first thought was that the Wolves were going to fall out of the playoffs. And now they're at this, the 7-game stretch where they've gone 2-5 in their last 7 games, brutal schedule. But just the way that, they were able to win a couple of those games and where they are right now with the games that they have left, I do think they make it in. And then, you know, Jimmy comes back and they're scary again. So, I mean, I think the Wolves are really good. I don't think, from what I've seen, and again, you know, I'm not a on the Wolves every day person, but what I saw from them earlier in the season when the Clippers played them a couple times in December, it didn't seem like they'd quite figured out how to get the most out of the talent that they had on the roster all playing together. I don't know if that's something that progressed a little bit more as the season went on before Jimmy went out, but certainly something that, you know, I mean, I enjoy the players on the Wolves. I like Wiggins. I definitely like Towns and Butler. Not a big Derrick Rose guy personally, but yeah, I mean, I wish, you know, I hope that that's something that they've been able to put together a little better so they can be a threat in the playoffs, because I think it's a really good roster. You know, the Jeff Teague thing kind of confused me, but it's fine. But yeah, I just hope, you know, my impression of them early in the season was that they weren't getting the most out of their talent, mm-hmm. and then losing Jimmy Butler is really a blow to that, because he was kind of the one picking up the pieces, and at least in the games that I saw against the Clippers, picking up the pieces and taking them to victories. So without Jimmy Butler, I think they're substantially less scary. But just looking at who they have left on the schedule, the Knicks, the Sixers, the Grizzlies, the Hawks, the Mavs, like those five games in a row are five wins. That might be enough to get you in with how difficult the Clippers' schedule is. In the Clippers, you know, with Minnesota being an 8 and the Clippers being a 9, it's hard to see the Clippers passing a team like the Wolves, because it's hard to see the Wolves losing more than maybe 3 games, and I think 3 is like high end for what they could lose for the rest of the season. And the Clippers, just with who they have left, are going to lose more games than that. So,
well, and far be it for me to complain about injuries to a Clippers beat reporter after all the injuries that you guys have suffered this season, not just with Griffin, but Gallinari, Patrick Beverley, Austin Rivers, all these guys going down and having to come back in. But the injury couldn't have come at a worse time for the Timberwolves, just with the stretch of games they've had over the last month of the season. That said, Towns has come into his own a little bit more, I think, than you saw even in a great stretch like he had in December. I think that he is taking over possessions more consistently and really showing that he can be the number one guy and kind of a blue chip player on this team, which is really encouraging for when Butler gets back. The bit of a discouraging thing is that while he took over games like the one against the Warriors and against Washington, they still struggled against San Antonio, and obviously they're a really good team. Aldridge just killed them when they were in San Antonio, and then the Rockets, losing the Rockets. I know this wasn't an off-the-wall prediction, but without Butler there, I anticipated Harden having a huge game, and it just, with his 34 points, it really showed not so much that Harden is a great player, which, believe me, he is. He's definitely still ahead in the MVP running this season, but it showed more that the Timberwolves don't really have that defender with Butler out that can step up and try and contain a guy like Harden with his scoring ability and versatility on the offensive side. And so that's more the discouraging thing, that they're not so much that there wasn't a guy to pick up offensively what Butler does, because I think you have some great offensive pieces on this team, but defensively, you just really see how on a night-to-night basis, they're still pretty lagging, and games like the Warriors, where they hold Golden State to 103 points, are more the outlier rather than the standard that they have still.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Clippers are kind of in a similar boat. They have not held a team to under 100 points, even in their wins, since December, I think. Yeah, December 31st is the last time they held a team under 100 points. In recent games, like in March, they've got games where they've allowed 120, 121, 121, 122. They're literally, most of their games are ending up, if you averaged out like their last 6 weeks, the average score is probably somewhere like 115 to 110. They are just not defending. And it's difficult to be too critical of it, because you look at like their last 3 games were against Houston, Oklahoma City, and Portland. So you've got the Paul Harden combo, like you said. you've got the Westbrook-George combo, and you've got the Lillard-McCollum combo. And who do the Clippers have to guard these guys? Well, if the Clippers had their guys, it would be Patrick Beverley and Avery Bradley taking on Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. That's pretty good. Like, that's as good of a combination as you could hope for, I think, to have in your backcourt to defend those two guys. But what's happening is that it's Austin Rivers, who's a solid defender, but he's not really the kind of guy you want to be throwing as your primary defender at a lead guard. And Sindarius Thornwell, who's a second-round rookie, and yeah, you know, he's got some tools. He was a good defender in college, but again, that's not the guy you want to be throwing at Paul George for 36 minutes. So, yeah, I mean, the Clippers, I think it's funny that, you know, trading Blake Griffin, they've actually, their offensive output has gone up a lot. I think it might be, you know, a pace thing a little bit as much of a ability thing, but the defense has just been, they haven't been able to stop anyone. And so actually that might be something that, you know, in this game against the Timberwolves could work in their favor with Butler being out, is that the Clippers, you know, it's kind of funny. Syracuse, I don't know if you have been watching the NCAA tournament.
Religiously.
Syracuse, yeah, all right, so me too. And what's funny to me about Syracuse is that I've been saying Syracuse is incapable of winning good basketball games. Like, if the score is going to be in the 70s, Syracuse can't win. But they're really good at making whatever games they're in ugly, bad basketball games. Mm-hmm. And then those are coin flips. So that's like we saw against Michigan State. They made one three-pointer. They had three assists. And the final score was like 55-52 or something like that. Like, what a ugly basketball game. But it took a lot of commitment and focus over the course of 40 minutes to keep it that ugly. They played it exactly how they wanted to play it. The Clippers are kind of the exact opposite. If the game's final score is going to be 100-95, the Clippers have no shot at winning that game because they cannot hold anyone to under 100 points. But no, if the final score of a game is going to be 118-113, that's like right in their sweet spot. So maybe a game without Jimmy Butler, you know, where it turns into a little bit of a more high-scoring affair, that could be something that really benefits the Clippers in a game like tonight. And this is obviously a huge game, you know, with the Clippers just being one loss back of Minnesota for eighth place.
Absolutely. And looking before the show, kind of doing some research on the Clippers, they have a solid offense throughout the course of the season, averaging over the season 109 points per game. But if you look at their numbers in January, that bumps up to 112. February, 113. In March, they're averaging 114 points per game. And so it's almost as impressive how their defense has tailed off that their offense has kind of compensated, and you see them just keep stacking up the point totals. And that's how they're staying in this playoff race, is their offense has done a great job of really kind of masking the defense by just going out and scoring just an insane amount of points night in and night out. And so for this game, you could almost see it going to the final score being like a 125-118 kind of game.
Yeah, and you know, for me, that would be like just another day at the office, right? I mean, this has really become, there's been one game in March where neither team has reached 110. There's been one game.
Oh, my gosh.
Every other game, at least one team has been at 110. There's been five games where at least one team has been at 120. I mean, it's just been
insane.
It's been in so many points. So many points. And what's funny is, to me, you know, I said the other night when the Clippers were playing against the Thunder, and they're in Oklahoma City on the second night of a back-to-back, Austin Rivers is guarding Russell Westbrook, and Darius Thornwell is guarding Paul George, and they're like down by a few points in the fourth quarter trying to scrap to like win this game on the road against Oklahoma City. And I just thought to myself, and I think I tweeted this out, I have no idea, like, I cannot explain for the life of me, I've been watching basketball for a long time, I cannot explain for the life of me why these Clippers are as good as they are. And I think if you like look at their lineup, and their lineup is basically, for the last few weeks and probably for the rest of the season, Austin Rivers, Milos Teodosic, Sindarius Thornwell, Tobias Harris, and DeAndre Jordan. And then off the bench, they're really only playing, you know, more than 10 minutes a game. Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. Everyone else is playing like 4 or 6 minutes. So it's like a 7-man rotation with Rivers, Teodosic, Thornwell, Harris, Jordan, Lou Williams, and Montrezl Harrell. And I just, like, looking at the other rosters that are in this Western Conference playoff race, it just doesn't make sense to me why they're in the conversation. Like, that they have won as many games as they've won, that they're 5 games above 500, that they're literally knocking on the door of a roster that I know Jimmy Butler's out right now, but that not only has Jimmy Butler, but also has Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns is just, it's insane to me. Like, doesn't it just feel to you like you can look at all these teams and think, like, you understand why they're there. Anthony Davis is why they're there. Rudy Gobert is why they're there. Jokic is why they're there. For the Clippers, it just doesn't feel that way to me. It's like some weird combination of role players getting hot in the right games.
They are literally the greatest collection of B role players that are doing, that are winning games and staying in this thing. It's insane. It's really impressive. We're going to keep talking about this game, breaking it down, but first, we're going to get a word from some sponsors. Hey guys, it's time to talk about the boatload of money you can make this week by betting at MyBookie. If you haven't checked them out yet, this is the perfect time to get in on the action. The madness of March is here. Lay down some money and score big on college hoops. Join me and thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie today. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me and our listeners. That's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay fast and without any hassle. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They even have in-game live betting so you can place a bet after tip-off. Join MyBookie now, and they will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. 50%, how can you beat that? You can even enter for a chance to win a $1 million bracket challenge. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, that's LOCKEDONNBA, to activate offer. Visit MyBookie today. Play, win, get paid. Looking at this game, like you're saying, it's crazy. There's a bunch of role players. They've kind of patched this team together with the pieces from two major trades, the Chris Paul to the Rockets to start out the season and in the summer, and then you had the Blake Griffin to Detroit. And amongst all these pieces and some rookies, they've really pieced together a team that is putting up points. They've got all these guys in just the right spot to really put up a crazy amount of points. Over the course of myself, over the course of the last couple of months, I have started a bromance with Montrezl Harrell since, what was it? It was in January against the Rockets in the game that ended where the Rockets tried to storm the Clippers locker room. I have loved watching him, but there's so many fun pieces on this team that are just fun to watch. You got Lou Williams, Tobias Harris is a guy that he's fun to watch. Even guys like Austin Rivers, he's going to do some stupid stuff in a game that makes it entertaining. This is a fun team to watch.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's like you said, it's such a weird mashup of role players. The Clippers are actually going to have, interestingly enough, like a roster spot issue this summer. They've got 2 first-round picks this year. Almost all of these players that they have are, like, they don't have very many guys who are going to be free agents this year, and the guys who are going to be free agents are, like, DeAndre Jordan and Avery Bradley, like, important players. So they're going to have to, like, cut some, like a guy like Sindarius Thornwell, who right now is starting down the stretch of this playoff push, could very well end up, when everyone's healthy and back and they're, you know, they have 2 new rookies to add to the fold and they're trying to use their mid-level exception. He could end up being like the 8th guard and getting cut, which is insane to think about that he's in this starting role right now. But, I mean, yeah, Montrezl Harrell has been phenomenal, like just amazing for a guy who's been coming off the bench, only playing like 16 minutes a game. He's got 33 double-digit scoring games and 30 single-digit scoring games. So he's literally scoring in double digits more often than he's scoring in single digits in 16 minutes a game. He's got, I mean, it's just been insane to see what he's doing on a nightly basis. It's just like so routine for me to be, you know, recording my podcast the next morning after a game and looking at the box score, and yeah, Montrezl Harrell, 12 points in 10 minutes, 14 points in 18 minutes. It really is kind of like a point-a-minute situation. And that average, or at least that number about him having more double-digit games and single-digit games, is actually, over the course of the schedule, way heavier in the second half of the season. So in the first half of the season, it was probably like a third, maybe, of every game he was in double figures. And now it's been like almost every single game since, it was really around January that he turned it on, I think, like January 10th. Since January 10th, he has 6 single-digit scoring games.
Gosh.
Since February 22nd, he has 1 single-digit scoring game. He's averaging 16 points in 19 minutes, 69% from the field. Just that level of production, you know, it's so funny. He's like, you never think of that scoring sixth man as being a center.
Mm-hmm.
But he really is scoring at like the rate and effectiveness that you would expect of a Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford type, right? Like, If Jamal Crawford was going to come in off the bench, and you know, I referenced Jamal Crawford because he's a guy who played for the Clippers for a long time, but obviously he's on the Wolves now too. But honestly, 16 points in 19 minutes on 69% shooting is a more effective bench scorer than Jamal Crawford has ever been.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's doing this in his second year.
Yeah, I mean it's so for him to be doing this is just. You know, I think it's a little revolutionary, honestly, and I wonder if it's kind of showing what the future of the backup center can be in the NBA, because there's been a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of uncertainty in the 4 and 5 positions in the NBA and what their future is and how they fit into this new era of offensive basketball. And, you know, I question Montrez's ability to ever really be a starter in the NBA because he's 6'8". And he doesn't have, while he's a phenomenal finisher around the basket, he doesn't have a lot of tools offensively in terms of making jump shots, you know, or anything. And at 6'8", I don't know that he can defend against the really good center, you know, the really good big men of the NBA on the starting lineups.
Mm-hmm.
Guys like Towns, guys like Anthony Davis, guys like Joel Embiid. And there's a lot of those unicorn types out there now. But I think he might be he could be like the best backup center in the NBA for 10 years with just how he comes in, changes the pace of games, scores 10 points in 16 minutes. I mean, he's been phenomenal.
No, and he's so fast too, because he is really deadly in transition too, is where he can really make hay and really hurt a team, is just getting out in front of a play in transition for the Clippers. I think it still surprises teams, honestly, is it's seeing this 240-pound guy thundering down the court and beating out some of their guards to get down to the other end.
Yeah, and he gets out in transition and he's like doing the most clumsy Euro step, like around some 6'3 guard. But then, you know, really, I think it's just like his hands, his touch, wherever he ends up within like 5 feet of the basket, it just drops in so nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys don't have that. I don't know if that's even like a practicable skill or just a natural ability, but he's just figured out whenever he's within 5 feet of the basket, like once every 3 games, he'll pull out like a sky hook. And he always makes it. But it's not like a go-to post move that he has down. It's just like he ends up in this situation, and this is how I can get this shot off over this bigger guy. So it's almost like an accidental skyhook. And a lot of his scoring seems to be accidental, but it's just wherever he is within 5 feet of the rim, he flips it in. And then, of course, when he's within 2 feet of the rim, he's dunking everything. So, I mean, he's definitely become a fan favorite, and he's just so exciting to watch. A lot of people, here's the extent to which he's become a fan favorite. A lot of people are like, why isn't he playing more instead of DeAndre? Which I think is, a little bit silly when you look at their two skill sets and what they bring to the table. But I think it's just because so much of what he does is so obvious, right?
Yeah.
A lot of what DeAndre does is a little more
subtle,
low key, just in terms of defensive rotations, contesting shots, things like that. But Montrez is just making an impact. He makes his presence felt every time he's on the court.
Yeah, a little more fireworks.
And when guys do that, you know, everyone notices. Coaches notice, definitely general managers notice. He's going to be a restricted free agent this summer. I'm sure someone is going to be interested in him, you know, at some price point. I don't know what that is because, like I said, I don't really project him as being a starting caliber player, but someone's going to have interest in him as a restricted free agent this summer. It's going to be really interesting.
This is what teams like the Warriors are hoping for Jordan Bell to be, or what the Blazers are hoping for Caleb Swanigan to be. This is the kind of guy they're looking for to come off the bench.
Yeah, I think Swanigan is a great comp for, like, could be potential Montrezl Harrell.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Bell, I don't know if he's strong enough, you know what I mean? But I think Swanigan would be a great, like, this is Swanigan's best case scenario as, like, an energy role player.
Yeah. No, yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think the difference, too, there is that Swanigan maybe has a little bit better shooting outside. He's a little more apt at shooting threes than Harrell. Before we head out here, Lucas, he's been on the podcast a couple times. He knows the drill. I need to bet this game, obviously, because I have a problem. So give me your score prediction so I can try and nail this this over-under bet.
So this might not be popular among your people, but I think the Clippers actually win this game. Their backs are against the wall after three tough losses. Minnesota, I don't think, is as scary without Jimmy Butler. I think if the Clippers are going to win the game, it's going to need to be a high-scoring game. So I'll go 118-113 Clippers.
118-113. I like it. I'm thinking even higher. I really don't see a ton of defense going here. I'm thinking 128-120. I'm really hoping that the Timberwolves pull this one out just because they are reeling a little bit after the couple of losses, going to be back home for this game. I anticipate actually somebody off the bench needs to be really big. Somebody off the bench has to compensate for the lack of defense in this one with a surplus of offense. I don't know if it's Jamal Crawford. I don't know. I don't know if maybe Tyus Jones just has an explosive night offensively off the bench. Really helps the team in transition. But somebody off the bench has to put up 20 points to be the difference in this one for the Timberwolves. But I'm seeing 128-120 kind of game. In a high-scoring affair, little defense.
That's a lot of points. I mean, but the Clippers have had games like that. I can't say it's not going to happen because they literally had – they scored 128 against the Knicks 2 weeks ago. So, and they let up 120 in each of their last two games. So they're right
there.
It's
very possible. All right, well, that's it. That's it for the Locked On Wolves podcast. Lucas, do you have any shows coming out or any articles that you have coming out that you would like to promote?
Yeah, so check out the Locked On Clippers podcast, of course, the sister podcast of Locked On Wolves, mm-hmm. as well as, I think both of us can agree, all of our other colleagues on the Locked On Podcast Network are doing an excellent job. And my blog is clipsnation.com, part of SB Nation, so you can read all the wonderful things that I have to say there. As well as follow me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han.
Yeah, absolutely. Go check out the written content. You can. There's so many places to get recaps on this game. I'll be doing the show tomorrow. Lucas will be doing a show. We'll both have written stuff on. He'll be having some written content on his blog. There'll be written content on the Locked On Timberwolves fan rake site. So there's so many ways to really break down and kind of digest this game before and afterwards. So definitely take advantage of all that great content. Lucas, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. You know you're always welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to the Locked On Timberwolves fan base for joining us for another Locked On Wolves show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.